Sure. I hereby call the meeting to order. It's Tom Rutledge.
So Holden said in his email, you know, the only official piece of business we have is to approve the budget, I guess, going forward, and that was in the financial update that Holden sent out. There's a budget that, you know, goes through 2012. So did everyone have a chance to take a look at that, or is there anyone that didn't have a chance to look at that yet and would appreciate a summary?
I have to admit that for the very first time. Yeah, okay. I didn't either. And I'm sorry, I read everything else but not the budget.
Okay,
Are
you guys, are you able to pull that up? I mean, are you prepared to vote?
I'm trying to
vote.
I'm trying to pull it up right now.
I am just struggling for a moment or two, but I don't want to slow us down because I can pull it up.
Yeah. So I mean, the big picture of the budget is, you know, we had a larger staff over the course of last summer, and we anticipate continuing to grow next year. And so that means, you know, additional hires that we would like to make. So we have, I guess one staffing update I should give right at the beginning is Wendy, who, you know, had been with us for about a year. She left GiveWell effective November 30th. And so she's no longer at GiveWell. So we can talk about that if anyone wants. But, you know, just in terms of our capacity, we're back to 4 full-time people. Stephanie, who worked for us over the summer, is starting full-time in February. And, you know, we would like to and project in our budget making 3 additional hires next year, full-time hires. And while that's a reasonable increase in the size of our organization, we had 7 people working this past summer, 2 of whom were temporary, and we had plenty of work for everyone to do and found it effective. And so we'd like to get up to and past that level in 2012. And so that, you know, the additional hiring is driving, you know, most of the increase in our projected budget. You know, other changes are, you know, we have some raises that are built into the payroll, and then also increased expenses based on, you know, things that we've seen over the past year. So, you know, a higher allocation to miscellaneous, a higher allocation to travel. Generally, we've roughly added $5,000 to our budget for site visits. That's something we found valuable. As we have more people, we anticipate more people going. So that, you know, that those are the main changes in the budget. Any questions about that?
Now, I mean, I have a question about fundraising. Is it, should we wait on that, or do you want to get into the details in the budget?
I think it affects your decision about how to, if you want to talk about fundraising before we vote on the budget, then we should do that. It's a separate issue from voting to approve or not the budget, then, you know, then we can talk about it now.
No, I think it's relevant because there's not infinite liquidity in the operational budget for GiveWell. So I guess the question I had is, clearly GiveWell has had great success in moving money to identify charities that can put it to use. I guess I'd like some perspective from you guys about your visibility on finances for GiveWell's operations. I mean, at some point, there's going to be a need to raise money, you know, at some point in the future, you know, at the earliest, you know, sort of second half of next year. Do you guys feel confident about the ability to raise that money?
Yeah, so I can take
worse
than...
I now can't hear anybody.
Yeah, Holden, why don't you go?
Okay. So I mean, we feel good about our ability to cover the budget that we're laying out right now. Earlier this year, we were projecting a large deficit, and so we started going to people who are customer donors, i.e., people who give to our top charities. And, you know, and asking them to give to support us. We also raise a level of support from the Helix Foundation, We got the other institutional source of funding. And right now, I mean, basically, it's kind of weird because there's a lot of donors who would rather give to our top charities, but who will give to us if we need it. And so it's never, you know, it's never, we're never going to run a huge surplus, because any time that we're projecting a balanced budget or a surplus, we tend to tell people, well, we're projecting a balanced budget, so, you know, if you want to give to our top charities instead, do it. That's how I think they like it. I think that maintains our relationship as well as possible. And so the bottom line is that, like, we are projecting a roughly balanced budget. If we were projecting a deficit, I think that very quickly certain money would come in to fill that deficit. And so I think that the when you look at the expected revenue, it understates what we could raise if we had to. And so basically, I feel pretty good. Like, I think we do project a balanced budget for 2012. If you just look at the projected revenue, it's not enough for 2013 expenses, but by 2013, I think we will have found more revenue sources. And more generally, I think that our model is working to support our operations, which is that, you know, we get people who are customer donors who give to our top charities. We form relationships with them, and then we get them to give to us if and when we need it. That's like a sustainable thing, and that causes our operational expenses to be able to grow as our money moves grows.
And just one quick addition is that, you know, we're also, Holden's talking about, you know, projecting a balanced budget and what our cash flow looks like. We're also, you know, while we don't and we have a policy that prevents us from building up excessive reserves, we're also not operating with zero reserves. And, you know, when we put together the combination of the expected revenues or what we call projected revenues, then also the ability to go to people if we need to and raise additional money. And then finally, the level of reserves we have that to us seems, you know, neither excessively aggressive nor excessively, you know, money hoarding. It seems like we're now in a reasonable financial position and in a better financial position than we felt we were a year ago today.
I certainly agree the liquidity is not unlimited, but I think I feel good about our ability to cover the budget we're proposing and, you know, and to maintain that size in 2013. I mean, that's not a sure thing, but I feel pretty good about that too.
Yeah, I mean, I think at some point it's worth making the case to potential donors that there's a lot of leverage in donating directly to GiveWell and GiveWell's operations. Because I sort of intuitively feel like that's true. And maybe you don't need to do that on a mass basis, but at some point you may.
Well, we do. I mean, we do for basically our approach is that for donors who are big enough that it would be worth it and that we're comfortable enough with it, we do make that case to them. And the usual response is like, if GiveWell needs the money, that is the first place I want to give. That is the best deal. And if GiveWell doesn't need the money, I'd rather give to your top charities. And, you know, we think that's a pretty reasonable position. And so we are making that case. We're not out there sneaking on our website because I think that that would have potential brand effects and the returns would be pretty small because we're, you know, we're going after the people where it's most likely to lead to actual revenue.
Yeah. Okay.
And can I ask sort of as a follow-on on Tom's question, maybe, around staffing, because, you know, I know you guys have plans for staffing and it's good to bring on people who have already been exposed to GiveWell and you've been exposed to them. But one of my questions is, are you thinking about the kinds of skills you're looking for as opposed to just general, are they good for GiveWell skills? Things along the lines of fundraising or marketing or whatever. Are you still looking for just good researchers?
We're mostly looking for good researchers. We've talked about the possibility of hiring someone in a more of what we call a research assistant role as opposed to a research analyst role, which would focus on a lot of the administrative tasks that we all share but fall most heavily on the analysts right now. I think we do have a need for that. Though I suspect that the best fit for that job will end up being someone who who to excels, let's say, on passion and interest in the analyst hiring process, and doesn't seem to quite be a good fit for that role.
Right, but that's very hard to bring someone on in one role and sort of take them into another that clearly has a different trajectory for them within the organization. So
yeah,
think about how you're hiring them.
In that case, we'd just hire someone for that role. Someone who we wouldn't be ready to. A lot of the people that we're considering are young, either right out of college or a couple years out of college, and we might just say, this analyst role doesn't seem like a good fit, but we think this other role is potentially a good fit. If that's something you're interested in, then you could come on board doing that.
Have you guys budgeted at all in terms of events where you may be flying somewhere to give talks, or like the thing Tom's doing tomorrow, anything like that where you put a certain budget in place to invest in building those kinds of relationships?
We have $5,000 budgeted for like message spreading, and then we also have our miscellaneous budget, and I think that covers what we've been doing. We also had a research community event that cost some money. If we ramped it up, our budget would have to look different, but I think it's reasonable for what we are doing.
Okay.
I mean, we don't pay for advertising anymore, or we don't pay for Google AdWords anymore. So, part of that, we have a line item for pledge raising, is what we call it, I think, in the budget. That stays the same, but, more of that is available for this kind of thing now.
Are there other questions on the budget from anyone? So we could probably move on.
Well, I guess we should vote to approve the budget. So can we just go around and have all the board members vote?
Yeah, Tom votes yes.
Fred Post votes yes.
Lindy votes yes.
Gary votes yes.
Colvin votes yes. That's it.
Yeah.
Ari votes yes.
Oh. Great.
Cool.
Okay. Unless Tim is here, I guess that's everyone.
So aside from budget, can we ask questions about some of the stuff that you guys are doing, or do you have an agenda that you want to go through?
No, we're holding this meeting because it's in our, it's our bylaws. We hold meetings 3 times a year, and so we've covered the strict agenda for the meeting, and now I think the main focus we had was just answering your questions.
I just had a question around Givewell Labs, and I know it's been an evolution for a couple of months, and you guys have been solidifying what you are thinking and what you're going to be doing with it. Can you give us an update on what you're thinking?
Yeah, I mean, we've not been focusing on it over the last couple of months because of trying to hit our deadline for top charities, and so it's been kind of in the background. So we're going to get back to it, I think, soon. Like, January. So that'll be a better time to talk about it, but there are a couple things going on. One is just, like, talking to people and trying to figure out what kind of person has, like, concrete ideas for things you could do with more money, and it's surprising sometimes how few there are, but, definitely talking with some of the larger charities working in areas we find promising, for example, Micronutrient Initiative in the area of nutrition, and then also talking to foundations and, potentially bilateral funders, because those are the ones that's really their job to find these kind of opportunities. So we've done some of that. And so that, you know, that is generating some list of possible ideas and areas to look into. And then there's also a list of, like, areas that we want to do more research on to decide how promising they are, and we have a pretty concrete agenda for that. And then there's a list of ideas that we think are, you know, have surfaced from this process that we think are actually promising. And so doing potential, you know, more conversations about those ideas and doing more research on them is, you know, so those are kind of the three fronts, is talking to people to try and find ideas and promising areas, doing background research to find more promising areas and more people to talk to, and then taking the ideas that come up and looking deeper into those.
Do you have any goals for when you might have a Jabot Labs idea developed? In terms, I mean, maybe sometime in 2012, maybe not, yeah. But I was wondering how you're thinking about the timing there.
Yeah, I mean, we said before that we wanted to have at least, like, one thing with, like, this is ready to go, this is recommended, by mid-2012. So I think that's still a realistic goal, a tough goal. That's going to, you know, it's not going to be easy to do, but I think it's probably a good thing if we've got something to push us a little bit and make sure that we make concrete progress and give a lab. So I would probably keep that goal while knowing that it's going to be tough to meet. But again, I mean, I think with Give a Labs, I think there will be a later point where I'm telling you what I know now. And I think it's going to be something where we're going to, you know, draw up a game plan again. I mean, we drew up a game plan before and it had all these things. It had our process, had our steps, had our goals, and I think we just want to revisit based on the experiences we've had and draw that up again. So I think at that point, you know, we may have a little bit better discussion about whether our goal is too aggressive or too easy on us or whatever. But it's, you know, my feeling right now is that goal of having our recommendation by mid-2012 will certainly push us to, you know, to move forward on this.
Great.
Are these possible priorities that you have listed in the attachment roughly in order of your proposed priority?
Roughly. Let me pull it up and make sure that it
has GiveWell Labs as the top thing, and so that's and then well, yeah, you're going to pull it up, I'm sure, by the time I mention it. So.
Well, the rest of us may not be looking. What's the order?
It says GiveWell Labs is the first of the possible priorities for 2012, then find more top-rated charities by focusing on the most promising interventions, vaccines, nutrition, tuberculosis control, neglected tropical disease control, and others. Then find more top-rated charities through open-ended investigations like 2011 process. Then marketing outreach, particularly at former employer, and then as a first step into succeeding at outreach in the financial sector, then promote GiveWell on college campuses for cultivating potential employees and donors, improve the website, and then revisit the goal of having our work evaluated externally and systematically.
So the way I lean now on those priorities is that GiveWell Labs, the first two, GiveWell Labs and then finding more top-rated charities by focusing on promising interventions, are like the core of the goals for next year. Those are the things that, you know, are going to take a ton of time, that we're going to have to focus on, that we need to do. They're both, you know, totally, they're kind of tied for number one. And then I would say that the improve our website, get our work evaluated externally, and promote GiveWell on college campuses are more like things that we almost certainly are going to do. They're not going to take a ton of work. They're not going to be like a huge part of our year. And then the other two are kind of maybe, maybe not. And that would be finding more top-rated charities through open-ended investigation and put more effort into marketing outreach. I think both of those are maybe, maybe not. So, Ellie, your thoughts on that?
I broadly agree with that. I mean, I probably think we're more likely to spend more time on more of the open-ended investigation, though it somewhat comes down to how we define everything. I mean, the bottom line is we're definitely going to be spending a lot of time trying to find outstanding giving opportunities. That's going to be most of what we do through GiveWell Labs and then GiveWell regular. And then the other things are things we're going to spend less time on.
So how will you guys actually prioritize between those three? Like, I'm a little new still to how you guys actually go through the prioritizations, but I know that you set deliverables this year of having the charities by November and then work towards getting that and having the deliverable. I don't know how much that held you accountable or not, but you accomplished it. And then now you're setting out those things. Will you have deliverables for all three, but just the first two? Or will you be navigating and saying, we're going to deliver at least on two of the three? Like, I don't know, what is your, how do you guys make those choices?
Numbers two and three are the same deliverable. It's really just a matter of tactics to achieve a concrete goal. So I would say, you know, the thing, like, the number one important thing that we accomplish next year is that, again, that we have enough room for money moved in top-rated charities for the money that we're realistically going to direct. And this year, it was a real stretch to make that happen. Next year, it might be a real stretch to make that happen. So that's, you know, that's the most important thing. And then I would say that some kind of goal around having concrete progress on GiveWell Labs would also be, you know, would be critical. So that, you know, the kind of at least one recommendation I made, you know, would be possibly for that.
Just in terms of the finding a top, you know, good charities in the promising areas, does that mean you guys are only going to stick to those areas? Or are you also going to be looking outside of those areas for top-rated or for top charities?
Well, it's numbers two and three are different tactics for one goal, which is to have a number of top charities. So I think Ellie and I are going to have a discussion. I mean, you know, all the staff and potentially board are going to have a discussion about which of those two methods is most likely to lead to more top-rated charities.
Sorry, I forgot what three is. Two is in the promising areas. What was three?
Three is doing the thing we normally do, which is being more open-ended and looking at lots of charities.
Okay, thank you. Is it part of me when I hear, you know, and this is, again, like you say, another call, but when I hear you say looking in promising areas like nutrition, triggers, blah, 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 it's part of me feels like, yeah, you can keep people alive, but what opportunities are they getting? And there's so many organizations out there that may be doing things that you might need to start measuring things in a different kind of way. And that is a philosophical discussion that you're right, I think we'll have to face.
Yeah, I mean, I think for the goal of having charities we feel great about, I think I would make an argument that, like, that the focus on health and nutrition makes more sense than it makes here at first glance. And I'm working on a blog post on this topic. It'll hopefully be up this week. You know, it's a debate that we'll have to have. But I think there's certainly an argument that if what you want is outstanding charities, that, you know, focusing in those areas may appear at first to be myopic and stuff, but I think it may actually be the best way to go.
So we can reserve that for another call, probably. One other area, I guess, that I wanted to ask you guys about where I think there is so much need, and I don't know if it's GiveWell's role, but somehow GiveWell seems better positioned to do it than anyone else I know, is in the area of donor education. And, you know, it's not quite marketing, and it's clearly not our core objective, but it does seem to be an area where you could achieve more of the goal if more people were educated. You see what I'm saying? It's not necessarily marketing for GiveWell. We've talked about it in the past. I think we talked about it in Boston a couple of years ago quite deeply, but does that lay on your radar at all in terms of some of the efforts that you want to make?
Yeah, I mean, very broadly. I mean, I think what we have been doing for years and more recently, and I think we will do in the future, is that we, you know, we make an effort to share what we're learning. And a lot of times that literally just means blogging it. But, you know, a good number of people who matter read our blog. There are other people we know who we can email and post to. Like, there are ways that these things that we write enter the conversation. And so the blog is our way of, like, writing up an idea, getting it out there for people's consideration. Some of them catch, some of them don't. You know, could we take on more efforts to, let's say, hire someone who's turning those pieces into things that are more conducive to being published in mainstream media and stuff like that. Yes, but I don't think that that is the top priority given all the other stuff we have to do. And also given that the strategy we've followed so far has produced growth that we have trouble keeping up with on the research side. And that's what I think, you know, continues to be the case for GiveWell, is that there's only so much sense it makes to put intensive effort into marketing when the minimal marketing you're already doing is leading to growth that your research is having trouble keeping up with.
Let me flip it over then, Holden. I mean, what if the education was to organizations that you could potentially direct more funding to were they to do the things that you would require of them to become more of a top, you know, to become a top-rated charity?
Right. I wouldn't put that under the heading of education. I'd put that under the heading of GiveWell Labs. That's where I would say, you know, the quickest and best way to turn a non-outstanding charity into an outstanding charity is to make a conditional grant and to, you know, to get those things that you need to happen and to be very focused in who your target is and which charity you think is close to being outstanding and could be kind of made into a recommended charity. So that's the approach I would take, and I think that, you know, broader outreach, I think you're not going to have enough. There's no charity that's actually going to make the changes they need to make because of just education alone, in my opinion.
I thought GiveWell Labs was project-oriented, not necessarily capacity-building of an organization.
Well, but I mean, so GiveWell Labs is just an arm of our process that's not subject to any constraints about the form or the sector. But I mean, the two of them dovetail pretty well. Like, if you want to start changing the way an organization works, you're no longer doing GiveWell proper, which is GiveWell just finding the best groups and saying, here, they're good, write a check.
Right.
You're now
right.
Doing something where you're taking an active role as a funder, and that's where I'd want to put it under the heading of GiveWell Labs.
Okay, so maybe at some point when you've solidified what GiveWell Labs will be doing, it'll give a better idea of why you think it will achieve that goal, because it's not clear to me yet if you find something that, the way I thought of GiveWell Labs was, oh, we find something that seems to be very effective and we want an organization to do it, we're going to fund it. I didn't realize it was different from that.
It's totally open-ended. That's the definition of it. And so you would consider things where it's just, here's a project that would be cool, but you would also consider things where it's, let's turn an organization into a GiveWell top-rated charity. And both of those would fall under the heading of, we make a recommendation that's conditional on certain things happening instead of just recommending that people write checks to a charity. And those, you know, in both places, to use our recommendation that way would have to fall under the heading of GiveWell Labs. And to do it without using our recommendation that way, to just do it as, like, outreach and education, I just don't think would have any impact. Like, the way that we have impact is ultimately through money. That's our theory of change. So either it happens naturally because we're moving money to charities and publishing it, which I think to some degree it may be, or it happens, you know, we speed it along by making the funding conditional.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense to me. That's fine. I guess on the donor education side, I would just say maybe there's, yes, as you do more with GiveWell Labs, there may be more opportunities to give, and it would be nice to sort of just ensure that you keep the pace going of the kinds of, whether it's informal or formal education that you're doing of donors. And, you know, any resources that you develop when you have conversation with donors to keep them and share them so that any of us who may be doing things like that can utilize them.
Yep.
Along the same lines, Holden, I'm curious, well, I mean, it's been a while now, but how did your talk at Google go? And is that the kind of thing, I mean, that's the kind of, quote, donor education, unquote, that you may, you know, be able to do more of opportunistically?
You know, we've done a couple of talks like that this year. I mean, Ellie also went to a bank in St. Louis and spoke there. I mean, we've done scattered things like that, hedge funds, and I've spoken at Google twice now. You know, I think it's usually what happens is the talk goes pretty well in terms of, like, people seem engaged. Usually you get a low yield on, like, new fans. You might get a couple. I mean, I think ultimately the Google Talks have generated some pretty serious benefit for us because, we didn't get everyone in the audience to become a fan, but we got a few, and some way or another, people at Google seem to be talking about us. This is what our web stats seem to be telling us. So I think, but it's like the way these things work is you go, you speak to a bunch of people, and a very small percentage of them, you know, you're kind of lucky if you walk away with one or two real fans from them. And then you hope that those fans will spread the word and get better things to happen later. So, I don't know, our feeling is that these talks are kind of, our policy right now is like, if we get invited to do one, we do it. If we don't, we don't. If we got invited to do a lot more, then we'd have to pick and choose more carefully. And, you know, if we're not getting invited, I think that it's already kind of on the border of, is this really worth the time? And so I don't think we'd be like really pushing for more of them.
Got it.
Holden, you know, I don't know if how much it's flagged for you. I assume you're probably more on top of it than I am, but given the Bridgewater move and just looking at some of the first hits I hit when I was on Google this time, do you have a sense of how big Just Give is getting? And I see a lot of stuff. They have a Giving Wisely section and partners, and would it make sense to form any sort of connection with them?
I don't really know the answer to that. So I've always thought Network for Good was bigger, and I think we have been featured on the website in the past, but I don't know. It's something we could look into.
Well, it's interesting because they have both a blog and some tips on giving that have a Giving Wisely type thing, and I don't know if you could form any sort of partnership. It might hit something that would be interesting. I don't know how big it is, so I can leave that to you. It was the first thing I got when I looked for how to give, how should I donate.
Yeah. We haven't had great results working with these kind of general giving portal things. I mean, we're on GuideStar. We've gotten almost nothing out of that. Because the thing is that they don't, it's like, if you get random unselected traffic, a very, very small percentage of people will convert and be fans, and that's part of the problem with these talks, too. Like, if you speak to 30 random people, you're kind of lucky if you get one fan. When you get selected traffic, like from Google searches, it's much better. And then with these groups, it's like, you know, so earned media, it's like you hopefully get a ton of traffic, and then you get a few fans. With these groups, it's like their traffic isn't that high to begin with, and their audience isn't that good a fit. So it's, you know, it doesn't, I don't know, my sense is that it wouldn't be the best thing to put a lot of effort into, but it may be worth looking into. And one of, you know, some of our main questions would be how much money is going through the site, how much traffic is there to begin with, because we know we would only peel off the slice.
I agree with those questions, so that makes sense to me.
Would now be a time to mention that Tim Ogden is here?
Yeah, it's a great time for that. Go ahead, do it.
Tim Ogden is here.
Yeah, and, I mean, one thing that's a change at GiveWell, I don't know when we talked about this, maybe on the conference call we held at the end of November about the research, but, you know, one thing that's changed for us is our ability to have access to some of the larger foundations. So, you know, the Gates Foundation is one of the large ones that's giving to the types of charities that we look at, you know, giving to the same causes, malaria, TB, et cetera. You know, we've also talked extensively with a foundation called CIF, the Children's Investment Fund Foundation that's based in the UK. The Hewlett Foundation is another big funder, and we've spoken with them about their research. And so, you know, those really, I think, are the three U.S. foundations giving, or CIF is not U.S., but the three private sources of funds going to international aid. And, you know, talking to them is another input into our process about what we should be thinking about looking at.
Just a quick correction. There are some other big foundations that do international aid, but it is true that those seem to be the main ones we hear about as being, like, I don't know, rationalist about it, results-oriented, whatever. I think there are some others that do it, but that are very traditional. So we're interested in learning from those, too.
Is everyone just being very quiet, or did I lose everybody?
Okay. Everyone's just being quiet. I don't know, Tim, if you heard the main agenda for the meeting, but it was largely Q&A, so you know, we're just answering any questions people have.
I was just briefly pondering whether everyone was on some sort of Google chat making fun of me or something.
You caught us.
That's true.
No comment.
Do you guys feel like you're getting any better sense about what the profile of a GiveWell supporter or GiveWell contributor is?
I don't feel like that has changed. Our view of that has changed significantly over the past 1 to 2 years. I mean, the thing that seems pretty consistent is how the people who give significantly tend to find us. And, you know, the main way we find donors or customers is people who find us through Google search, or people who find us through media where the person is writing about us or the, you know, our solution to the problem. And the types of efforts that seem much less, you know, don't seem to work as well are, you know, just trying to go after a group of quote unquote high net worth donors and, you know, trying to find a GiveWell supporter in the mix. You know, it's much more people who are reading something about us or have some inclination for the type of work we do and then seek us out.
Yeah, I would say that we wrote a blog post kind of profiling GiveWell customers. I don't know if you guys saw that, but I would say it probably still holds in my mind the things we wrote.
I mean, one thing I guess that's worth adding is, you know, Holden put up in the you know, possible priorities for next year talking about college campuses. And, you know, I do think engaging with younger people is potentially a very, you know, very fruitful way for us to find potential donors, because it's getting to people before they've already decided on what cause they're going to give to. It's getting to them when they're, I don't know if this is true or not, but, you know, my impression is perhaps more open to new ideas about how they should structure their careers and their finances. And certainly now we've now been around long enough that we're starting to have donors this year. Who are people who first read about us when they were sophomores and juniors in college, and now they are finally working and they start to give, they start to give to charity. I think that getting to large groups of, you know, also accessing large groups of people on college campuses, at least it has been so far easier than accessing those large groups of people at companies. And so, you know, that does seem like a pretty reasonable path to go down from a marketing perspective, but also from a, a donor education perspective.
And we've already started putting a toe in the water. So first off, there's a guy who was an intern for us and is trying to do this at Pomona. And then there's also kind of this other group, Giving What We Can, that is, you know, similar to us in values. And they have, they have chapters at like Princeton. They're opening one at Harvard. They have one at Rutgers. So we visited the Princeton one a couple times. But there's, you know, the nice thing is that there's, in some places, there's kids on campus who are willing to help with that. And I think that's pretty important for getting real interest to it. Another random observation about our donors. We are having the experience for sure where people give influence giving goes up a lot over time. And I think that may be a combination of, A, the fact that, you know, our donor base is young for a donor base. You know, I think most, not all people are like between 20 and 50, which is just, you know, not your normal profile for a donor base. And so a lot of those people's earnings may be going up and financial stability may be going up. But we're also seeing a phenomenon where, you know, I don't know exactly what to make of it, but someone will give one amount 1 year and then they'll give a lot more the next year. And it may just be that they're, you know, they give, they see how it goes, they talk to us, they kick the tires, they get more comfortable with what they're doing, what we're doing, and we get a bigger slice of their mind share the next year.
So I have a couple of questions. Let me list them and then you guys can tell me if you've already answered them. One is, what, if anything, came out of the deworming work and that publication and giving what we can, and what's the status of that relationship and some of the concerns you had going into that? Two is, what, if anything, are you seeing in terms of, you know, new organizations or initiatives popping up? You know, there have been a lot of different organizations working in the Give Better area that started around the same time as Give Well. Some have come along since then, some have gone away. Just wondering what you're seeing in overall trends. Are we seeing any sort of consolidation, you know, people coming to Give Well rather than going off and starting something on their own? And then third, any thinking about sort of new partnerships, new possibilities for partnerships that you're thinking about for the next year?
Can I ask you to clarify that number two first? What do you mean? I mean, what groups are you talking about, that number two?
Well, so, I mean, you know, Philanthropedia started around the same time.
Right.
They don't seem to have gotten much traction. What's the Write the Charity one? Polonese thing?
Great nonprofit,
right? I don't know what traction they got. We've talked about Just Give getting a lot of attention, which is not necessarily Give Better, but is in fact a somewhat of a response to the same phenomena. Where do I give? How do I know that does good? Giving what we can, et cetera, and so forth.
Okay.
Are you seeing any change in that or not?
Okay, so I'll answer these three to the best of my ability and probably can add what I missed. So on number one, you know, I think number one went surprisingly well in terms of just how it ended, but also in terms of just like how justified our time investment ended up being, because we did, you know, we spent a good amount of time this year trying to understand deworming. So for background, there's this group Giving What We Can. They tend to get attention for giving away a lot of money as a percent of their income. So a lot of them are like college students or, you know, giving away sizable chunks of money. And they also have been publishing these charity recommendations. And, you know, we always kind of saw them as a competitor because of that. And they recommended not the same exact charities that we did, although there was a lot of overlap. And, you know, their top charities were deworming charities based on the fact that this World Health Organization estimate said that deworming was the most cost-effective intervention in terms of the cost per disability-adjusted life year, or DALY. So we spent a good amount of time this year looking into that, and we did that not just because of this group. We did it because we want to know how good deworming is, because a lot of the smart people say it's the best, and we had a potential recommended charity doing deworming, and we also wanted to know how good these World Health Organization estimates were, and this was one that looked kind of the weirdest to us, so we wanted to see what was going on there. And so what ended up happening is that we got all the details of the estimate. The estimate was horribly flawed, just a complete disaster. We corrected the flaws. We got the World Health Organization to acknowledge the corrections. It was off by a factor of about 100, and, you know, was too favorable to deworming. And so once we fixed that, we saw that deworming is, in our opinion, you know, not terrible cost effectiveness, not great cost effectiveness. The fact that it's also proven and pretty easy means that it's like a pretty good intervention in our view, but not by any means the best. And a couple things came out of that. One is that, well, this was essential because our number two charity ended up being a deworming charity, so we had to do that work to recommend them. We also learned not to rely on the World Health Organization estimates. We now do our own. We also have a case study in why you shouldn't rely on opaque estimates. I think that's really good for us to look forward. I think we have something to point to when we say why we need to see the details and why people need to be transparent. I think it was a really good blow in the open data direction. I think that the time we invested was really well spent, because we had to understand deworming. It's our number two charity. And in the bargain, we got, you know, this great case study in open data and learned stuff about the WHO.
Yeah, and the other thing I want to add, aside from the research benefits, is if, you know, when I reflect on what we can do in terms of getting the word out about GiveWell and getting attention for the work we're doing, more work like the work we did on deworming is at the top of the list. Obviously, it's really hard to replicate the opportunity to find an error that large in a highly credible estimate or you know, relied upon estimate like that. But, you know, we do that work, and it comes the impact of it comes across in a couple ways. So first, you know, we see the types of blogs that are writing to the audience that we think is our audience cover it and talk about it. And it, you know, gets new people learn about GiveWell, new bloggers learn about GiveWell. And we got a good amount of traffic from, you know, from doing just that estimate and getting the coverage. And then the second thing is, you know, for a lot of donors, it's just a long time in between hearing from GiveWell in a substantial way about what's going on with our work. And it's also, you know, tough while they, I think, believe in GiveWell's mission and, you know, understand and want to give to our top charities because they think that's the best option they have. I think that there were just a group of reasonably large donors that I've talked to who, you know, were impressed by seeing that work, and it reminded them of the, you know, the type of analysis that we do. And so, you know, it was good in that way as well. And then finally, you know, Holden was mentioning giving what we can, but there are people who, you know, I talked to last year who were thinking, well, there's GiveWell, there's giving what we can. I can't really tell the difference. I'll split my donation. And, you know, this year, the same people say different things. You know, they say like it's much clearer to them what the differences are, and, you know, that relying on our research makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And I think it just in general, it was a good demonstration of why the work we do is valuable. That, you know, because some of this stuff is kind of there's so little concrete and so little right and wrong, but this was a case where we really kind of, you know, showed our credibility as analysts. And we are thinking about doing more work like this. Like, there are other areas where it's like, I see a result, it's in the research, people are using it, people are accepting it, something looks a little off. Let's see if we can get the data and figure out what's going on.
Based on everything you just sound like a missing possible priority from your priority list.
What'd you say?
Based on everything you just said, that would seem like a missing possible priority from the priority list.
Yeah, I agree. It should be on there. Okay. Your second question on other groups working on getting people to give better. In my kind of impression is that we aren't seeing a lot of traction and improvement and growth in our world and in our mind space from Philanthropedia and great nonprofits, and we aren't seeing new contenders pop up either. They could be growing a lot in their own audience or in some, you know, some different part of the world, but we're not seeing them emerge as competitors for our donors. We're not seeing any numbers from them on their impact on donations. My impression is that it's still not very high. I think Charity Navigator is working on improving their ratings. I think it's really great that they're trying to do that. I'm not really optimistic about the path they're on for making those better. And so, you know, if you're talking about, I mean, right now it kind of seems like there's not a lot of competition, I guess, in this space of this, you know, let's serve the rationalist donor who wants to do as much good as possible. I don't know if that answers your question.
It's part of the way. I think, you know, one way to measure the impact and reach of GiveWell is that people don't try to start things like GiveWell. Right?
Possible. I don't know. I mean, if they were, that could be a good sign, too. So it's a little, I don't know which one is the right thing to be looking for.
Yeah, I mean, something of an argument can be made both ways, but a lot of the people, I think, coming into the space aren't saying, oh, look, there's an underserved market. see what success GiveWell is having, they're saying, there's nothing out there like this. Somebody should do this.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's true to a degree, and I think, you know, we've certainly had the experience of multiple times of someone who's kind of trying to do this kind of work themselves, and then they kind of decided that they were just going to rely on us instead. You know, that's definitely happened with individuals, with organizations.
Right.
But it's a little weird, because it's like if you get successful enough, then you expect people to try and imitate you. But I do see what you're saying. Like, it's kind of, you know, there might be more of a feeling that we haven't succeeded to the point where people want to imitate us, but we're prominent to the point where people are trying to duplicate us. It's possible.
Yeah, that's just, where I would say very big.
Ideally.
Yeah.
The third question was about possible partnerships.
Yeah. I think the things I want to see along the lines of partnerships are I want to get to people with money and influence them and potentially have them influence us about how to spend that money well. So, you know, more dialogue with foundations, being taken more seriously by foundations, learning more from them and also influencing the way they do business is conceptually the partnership I'm most excited about. Another kind of partnership, Ellie might totally disagree with me here, but, you know, I look at something like Charity Water, and they raise a lot of money for water. I think that potentially they could work with us on how to spend that money as well as possible. I don't know if that's something that we want to do. I don't know if there's enough money there or water is a good enough cause, but it's something that's certainly in the back of my mind. So that's the kind of partnership that I'm interested in, is someone who has money, who raises money, who has access to money, and, you know, we can help influence the conversation. And the groups that I think we've probably put too much effort into and thought about, you know, more than we ought to have are the groups that are kind of more superficially good partners, because they're portals, their donation portals or their donor resources. So it kind of seems like conceptually they'd be a good partner. But, you know, just getting a partnership with one of those just doesn't, in my opinion, is not likely to have the world-sized returns. And I'd rather focus on groups where, you know, where there's definitely something real, where it's, you know, you're talking to the person who decides how to spend the money and you can influence them. And you don't have so many degrees of separation to get to someone who's actually making that kind of decision.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely worth thinking in the direction that, you know, my completely thinking fast-driven assessment is that the new charities that are getting attention tend to be charities that are very good at fundraising and actually have very little intention of implementation. They, you know, perceive themselves as, hey, we're going to engage people and then we're going to get the money to where it's supposed to go, like Charity Water and like some of these malaria charities. And I would expect to see a lot more of those types of organizations, more than I expect to see innovative organizations in the field who figured out how to do really great things and are now going to try and raise money for it.
Yeah, that's an interesting theory. That sounds like it might be right. And yeah, I mean, those are the kind of organizations where potentially, you know, there could be a lot of benefit in working with them. You have to think about all the priorities we have. And, you know, for example, I mean, one of the big factors in how much we'd want to work with a Charity Water is what do we think about water? So we have to do more research on that, because I think if we decide that water is one of the best causes and that there's major value added in doing things well instead of poorly, then, you know, I think it becomes tempting to try and work with them if we can. If we decide that water is kind of a crappy cause, or that, like, all charities doing it are kind of the same, then it's not so interesting. Now, malaria, I mean, that's interesting. Like, I hadn't really thought about the idea of seeing whether we could influence malaria no more, and that's an interesting idea.
So what would you see as the incentive to trying to, to me, those groups, like Charity Water or, you know, let's just imagine Malaria No More giving out, you know, money to lots of little malaria charities, like they're just in the position of having all the cards, and it just seems like, at least given where we are right now, that like it would, I don't know, like be a pretty tough road to hoe forming a partnership with them in the way that I think you're conceiving.
Well, it all depends on the specific personalities involved. I certainly, if it's a certain kind of personality, you give up, and if it's a certain kind, it goes great. And in between, I mean, there may be some room for, like, you know, for people to kind of the fact is that if they're not doing their job as well as they could be, that could get embarrassing for them down the line, and that they may recognize in kind of a strategic way the value of getting on top of it as soon as they can.
Yeah. I mean, I guess just my instinct is that's pretty unlikely to happen, just because there's a whole lot of people that, you know, if they felt that way, you know, whether they were at foundations or otherwise, would be aware of us and would be engaging us or relying on us in ways that they, you know, haven't. They haven't reached out to us. And, you know, that would be just as easy. And so, you know, we could think about kind of the push strategy of going to the charity water, you know, picking them out of a hat as a potential partner. But I would just guess if that was a strategy that was likely to work, we'd hear back from, we'd have heard from organizations interested in doing something similar.
So yeah, I'm not as sure of that.
I think that my answer to that, Ellie, is that there's a difference between an organization who thinks there is a difference and there's a major difference and it matters, in an organization who just wants to do as much good as they can and is really good at fundraising. So partnering with GiveWell, I would not expect to be at the top of the agenda items or even in the top 10 agenda items for organizations like Charity Water or Malaria No More. They are operating on a basic assumption that there are good charities out there and they're going to give them money and good things are going to happen.
Yeah, and I know that maybe, you know, oh, sorry, go ahead, Tim.
Well, I think the charities that, or these organizations that are excellent fundraisers, the clue to me would be, have they hired a couple of program officers who have, you know, credentials or reasons to be good, as opposed to a couple of program managers who are just sort of transferring funds? Because as Holden said, you know, I agree that there's something of a personality thing, that if the organizations perceive them part of their value add as selection, I would expect that conversation to go much more roughly than the, I suppose there's some difference between the different water charities, but I mean, you know, how bad could Save the Children be?
I also think that it's, you know, it's unlikely to be at the top of the priority list for next year. I mean, just looking at what we have to do and, you know, and what it would involve, not in terms of building the partnership, but more on the research side, what it would involve to really, like, you know, figure out how to work with their constraints, I think it's like when we talk about down the line, what kind of partnerships are we interested in? I think we are interested in those kind of partnerships. But I think for the next year, I think, you know, it's a little hard to see that topping the list or getting on the list, given how much we have to do with the capacity we have.
Yeah, and I would just suggest potentially, though, that water is a very hot entry-level international giving topic.
Yeah.
And so I would say under the priority of expansion of coverage, you know, doing that first level on water would be very high, simply in terms of increasing the number of people who might actually look at GiveWell. If you then do it, you may find somebody like Charity Water, as you said, Ellie, coming to you. But since you don't say anything about water, why would Charity Water ever talk to you?
I mean, so there's, like, I think two things that I'm thinking that, I mean, certainly, like, reaching out to a couple of these organizations, you know, in water, there's a whole bunch that do the, you know, larger U.S. charity that grants out to smaller organizations on the ground and seeing what's there and having conversations. That's low cost. So it's, you know, there's, you know, not a whole lot of reason not to do it. But let me just, there's two reasons I think that I'm skeptical it'll be successful. So one is the fact that, you know, I've talked to a lot of people who are in a similar position to, you know, the position that the charity water person, the that hypothetical person would be in. And, you know, the way they, so they're people who, you know, work at corporate foundations or family foundations. And, you know, when we were trying to raise pledges back at the end of 2008, we just did a project where we called like 50 of them and tried to talk to each of them about what they did. And it was, you know, as everyone knows, since we don't do it now, like pretty much a total failure. And I think it's because like people saw themselves as having the value add of selecting organizations, but didn't think that like we had some particular value add. Now it's over and above what they were doing. Now it's certainly very true that a whole lot has changed in the last few years, and so those conversations could go very differently. But the reason I'm skeptical that it would is that our experience in having the conversations with people is that we're just like talking about giving in such different ways that it's like almost difficult to even communicate what we're trying to find and why. And that is so consistent across talking to foundations and you know, donors, that and that's sort of where the charity water is. Like it's just hard for me to, I mean, just hard to believe that all, you know, you'd be able to convince someone that, you know, what they were doing was wrong, that you provided them with something better, and that they had the incentive to change course.
So I think I am more optimistic about this kind of thing than Ellie, but I think it may be time to kind of table this conversation with putting out there what we agree on, as far as like, if we were to go down this road, the two things you'd want to do next are like, get a contact at one of these places and feel them out. And secondly, you know, look into water, for example, for charity water. And that's something that I think we're probably going to do. We're probably going to look into water. So that's, you know, I think those are two things that are pretty likely to happen over the next year. And then as far as like what happens after that, I think is, you know, something that could be a conversation.
Yeah. And I by no means am advocating that this leaps to the top of the priority list. Where I would talk about the priority list is, water and cook stoves as two gateway drugs for lots of first-time small international donors.
Right. Yeah, and there's some others, too. I think surgery and orphanages are also kind of, you know, causes where a lot of aid professionals kind of ignore them, but a lot of donors are really interested in them, and so there could be a lot of room for improvement.
Yeah, I certainly agree on the medical, so the medical care trip idea, or
yeah,
the dramatic intervention idea. Orphanages, I think, you know, there's plenty of people out there campaigning against orphanages. I don't know how much value add GiveWell can have to the, this is a really bad idea.
Right. Yeah, well, that one would be not higher on the list. So I mean, look, if we're talking about what's likely to happen in the next year, I think looking into water is pretty likely to happen. You know, having that kind of preliminary conversation is something that might happen. And as far as these other causes, I think, well, those are probably more down the line. Surgery is another possibility. It's something that I'm certainly interested in.
Just away from causes, if you guys are still looking for outside critiques of your research, I mean, it seems like getting foundations involved in that process would both potentially create some dialogue and give you some perspective on how they think.
Yeah. I don't think foundations are going to be involved in that process. From what I've seen, I don't think they have the kind of staff that would do that work well, or that would want to do that work of really, like, you know, reviewing the details of what we do. Maybe at a high level, maybe for the kind of like, you know, the kind of finding the best charity type challenge, maybe. I don't know. I think that's an area we are still interested in. We still want to do. I think enough has changed that we want to rethink it.
Yeah. I would argue that if you can find the program officer who deals in a particular area and approach them as an expert, that I think you will actually have some success in getting them to review your research, and it could open some opportunities. I agree that going to a foundation and trying to find the person who might be right would be a waste of time.
Right.
But if you identify the right program officer and ask them to be a reviewer, those people do tend to perceive themselves as experts and think that they have advice to offer.
Can I actually, sorry, can I just interject and suggest that maybe this is a conversation that we need not have as a whole board, but maybe could be moved to one of our strategy calls? Because I feel like we're getting really into the areas that we had talked about before in terms of what causes and, you know, the things that maybe not everyone on this call needs to be involved in or wants to be involved in and may not be core to what we need to do as a board tonight. Feedback.
I don't know.
I'm
fairly high level to me, but what do other people think?
I think we've largely wrapped up that topic of conversation, and I didn't have more questions for this forum, so.
Right. Okay. I already had another question, Ellie. Should I go into that one?
Sure.
Okay. So he's talking about what we think now in terms of our, like, potential for money moved and, you know, whether it's up to expectations and where we think we're going. And, you know, I think my main response on, the truth is that we never had a clear expectation for what we think our money moves can be. It's just unknowable. It's like the only experiment or research that tells you the size of the GiveWell market is to just, like, run GiveWell and see what happens. So I've always been a little uncomfortable saying, like, this is the size we should be, or setting goals, or saying, you know, we want our traffic to be X, or, you know, I just don't know what to do with that. I feel like what we've been doing is, like, we do what we can, we see what happens. So far, what's happened is the growth has been rapid. And now the level is, you know, is serious. We're in the millions of dollars that we're directing to top charities. That's enough for people to stand up and take notice. That's enough to have an influence on certain charities and on certain parts of the sector, and to give us, you know, audiences with people that would give us the ability to have more influence. So, you know, so all that stuff is good. I think long term, we would want to see at least, like, $10 million a year sustainably and robustly flowing as a result of our recommendations. And that's just, I mean, there's nothing there except the idea that $10 million a year makes you, like, a big charity. And so, you know, to consider GiveWell kind of worth all the effort, I mean, that's what we hope to see eventually. I don't really know what to say other than that. Like, I've never really had a good sense of, like, what's the possible market size here. What I see is that we're getting good growth. We're at a pretty high level. There's still plenty. I mean, you know, we're at a level where it's enough to matter. And there's still plenty of work left to do, and we don't know where it's going to go after that. I mean, you know, certainly one of the things we've seen is that it's unusual people who resonate with GiveWell. So one of the things that I would say is unlikely is that we can, you know, is that $100 billion out of the $200 billion a year given by individuals is going to be following GiveWell's recommendation. But again, if we could get 1%, that would be how much the Gates Foundation gives away. So that in itself doesn't tell us a ton about upside, and you also don't really know what happens if you can get peer pressure working for you instead of against you. And once you reach a critical point, that may be possible in some circles. You know, I also think we know our market's not so small that will never matter at all. So that's pretty much what we know. I don't know, Ellie, anything to add?
No, sounds right to me.
Other questions out there?
No.
Not for me.
No.
What? Okay, so I don't think that's about it. We're going to have, I think, a more in-depth review, and so if people have other thoughts about things they want to see us addressing in our self-review, our self-evaluation, our annual plan, please do send them to us. I think the next meeting will be about that. And, you know, overall, I mean, this is good. Things are looking up, I think, in general. Growth continues to be strong, so, and we're happy with our research, so that's to me the biggest takeaway. And I don't know. Is that it, Ellie?
Yeah, that's it. Tom, would you mind sticking around for 2 minutes? Let's just run through the schedule for tomorrow before we get off the phone, if you don't mind.
Sure. Can I just ask for everybody, do you guys have a date in mind for the meeting in the first of the year?
No. What do you mean, like the next board meeting to discuss the annual review?
Yeah.
No, we don't yet. We have to, you know, we have to see where... I mean, we haven't really begun that process. We're still deep in giving season, and we don't even really want to begin that process until we have all the numbers and all that.
Yep, okay.
Is there a reason you're asking? I mean, I think to do our review means will take us through mid-February. So mid-February is probably, I would guess, is around the earliest time you would do that. Is there some reason you have a particular date in mind or set of dates?
No, if you guys had a date, I mean, it would just help to be able to schedule around it. But if you don't, that's fine. We'll pick it up when you have one.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot for all your work.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. And congratulations.